Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod. TikTok on the brink of a congressional ban. Voting is set for Saturday. Former White House Chief Tech Officer Anish Chopra says the risks are real.
The two big threats are, will social media influence elections and markets? Let's be vigilant that the definitions of what is a foreign-controlled adversary and who is influenced by needs attention.
And we're sizing up potential retaliation from China.
It is a different world, but we have to acknowledge that. And investors have to acknowledge that if they own companies who do business in China.
The best-known twins on HGTV, the Property Brothers.
But who's who? That's the question.
What's hot in housing, and just how hard is it to buy a new home?
Now, they say the average person moves every 3 to 5 years, and I don't know who the hell loves moving that much. If you're going to buy a house, get something you know your family can grow into.
All that today, but first, NBC's Raf Sanchez is on the ground in Israel following the country's retaliatory strike in Iran.
At this point, both Israel and Iran appear to be downplaying the attack this morning.
It's Friday, April 19th, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Andrew by in 3, 2, 1, cue Andrew.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Melissa Lee. Joe and Becky are off today. Israel now carrying out a narrow strike against Iran and is assessing its effectiveness and the damage caused. The action appears to be limited in an effort to try to avoid escalation. And we saw the markets move downward. We're looking right now at the Dow off about 130 points. It had been worse before.
So we've had that expected bid
this was
for
expected,
safety.
But,
right.
But the question is this a perform? I mean, the hope is that this is a, I can't call any attack performative.
But just to show
just, right.
that we're going to retaliate.
Exactly.
We're not going to stand for it. We also saw the reaction in the commodities market, although like some of the other assets, the initial reaction was steep, and then we sort of paired some of those gains. Let's get a live report from the region. NBC's Raf Sanchez joins us now from Tel Aviv. Raf, good morning.
Melissa, Andrew, good morning. For nearly a week, the world has been waiting to see how Israel would respond to that massive barrage of Iranian drones and missiles. This morning, we have an answer, and it does not appear, at least at this moment, that we are hurtling towards further escalation. Here's what we know. A source familiar with the situation tells me Israel carried out a, quote, limited strike inside of Iran in response to that attack. Israeli officials have spent the last couple of hours assessing the damage and effectiveness. The target appears to have been a military base near the city of Isfahan. That's a couple of hours south of Tehran. And it is not clear at this point whether the attack was carried out with fighter aircraft, with missiles, with drones. The U.S. did get at least a generalized heads up from the Israelis that this strike was coming, according to a source familiar with the situation. The U.S. making very clear it was not directly involved in this attack, and American forces across the Middle East on high alert in case Iranian retaliation would target any of those outposts across the region. But at this point, both Israel and Iran appear to be downplaying the attack this morning. The Iranian President Raisi, speaking in the last hour, made no mention of this whatsoever. Iranian state media has been stressing that the situation in Isfahan is calm, that people are going about their daily business. The Iranian military is saying the explosions that people heard in the early hours of this morning were Iranian air defense missiles going off. They are not at this point pointing the finger of blame at Israel. They are not promising retaliation. And here in Tel Aviv, Israeli officials on the record are neither claiming responsibility nor denying responsibility for this attack. This appears to be a measured diplomatic approach. They are not crowing. They are trying to give the Iranians space, at least, to not retaliate. That is what the U.S. and other countries have been hoping would happen. It's worth noting the Israeli military has not imposed any new restrictions on the civilian population here in Israel. That appears to be an indication that right now, at least, they are not bracing for major retaliation. And in the next hour or so, we are expecting to hear from Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He's speaking at a G7 meeting in Italy, and that will be the first time we are hearing officially from the Biden administration since this morning's attack. Guys.
Raf, thank you. Raf Sanchez in Tel Aviv.
Back here at home, we're watching a whole bunch of other stories, including this one, former President Trump's criminal hush money trial. 12 jurors, one alternative has been selected. Five alternates remain to be picked. Opening arguments could begin as soon as Monday. Trump blasting the case after the court adjourned, saying the whole world is watching this New York scam. Meantime, shares of Trump Media jumping by nearly 26% in yesterday's session. This more than 17.3 million shares changing hands during the day, and its market cap ended the day at $4.5 billion. It comes after a 15% jump for the stock on Wednesday. So it tumbled, and has now regained some kind of ground. Obviously not where it was at the beginning, but
not nearly.
Nonetheless, unclear what's moving it the other way.
Right. It was unclear what was moving it at all.
It's been unclear the whole time. Meantime, automaker Hyundai confirming to NBC News that it has paused its advertising on Elon Musk's social media app X after a sponsored post from the company appeared next to what it said was anti-Semitic and pro-Nazi posts. The carmaker saying it is speaking directly to X about brand safety to ensure that the issue is addressed. The head of business operations at X confirmed the advertising pause to NBC News and said the account that made the anti-Semitic post has now been suspended because it violated X's policy against abusive profiles.
There is a new report in the Wall Street Journal that says China has ordered Apple to remove some of the world's most popular chat messaging apps from its app store in the country. It says Meta's WhatsApp and Threads, as well as messaging platforms Signal, Telegram, and Line, were taken off the Chinese app store Friday. Apple said it was told to remove certain apps because of national security concerns. In a statement, the company told the Journal, "We are obligated to follow the laws in the countries where we operate, even when we disagree. Those messaging apps can only be accessed in China through virtual private networks, VPNs, that circumvent China's firewall, but are still commonly used." This is, the ban is in place. You're not supposed to use these things in the country. So this is a little bit of a formality. But what has triggered them to say to Apple,
but this,
you take
this
it
is
off gonna, now?
You want to just add a little bit of kerosene to the TikTok fire.
Yeah.
I would imagine that this is now going to be the talking point of the day. If you're in Washington, D.C., thinking about excommunicating TikTok, you will excommunicate TikTok even faster because you're going to say, look what they just did over here.
Right. And that could just be the tip of the iceberg in terms of what China can do to retaliate on U.S. businesses.
By the way, note and notice, we've been debating what's going to happen to TikTok publicly for a very long time now.
Yes.
These guys put out a statement overnight that it's just happening. Meaning in China, this is just happening. Like it's not. There's no debate about whether Apple should remove it. Mm-hmm. There's no conversation.
Of course not.
There's no nothing.
Right.
It's just a different world.
It is a different world. But we have to acknowledge that. Right. And investors have to acknowledge that.
Yes.
If they own companies who do business in China, there are a lot of them.
Meta now rolling out its free artificial intelligence assistant across its social media platforms. This includes WhatsApp, now banned in China, Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger. In a video announcement, the company's CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, saying the assistant can answer questions, create animations, and generate images. That is, AI was built on the company's largest large language model called Llama 3. The AI tool is a competitor to ChatGPT and Google Gemini. But in a unique twist, Meta has partnered with Google and Microsoft to provide results from both companies' search engines. Zuckerberg saying the company believes that Meta AI is now the most intelligent AI assistant that you can freely use. By the way, Llama 3, I think, is pretty good. I've just been playing with it. It's probably not as good, just to be totally straight with you. I mean, Claude 3 by Anthropic is outrageous. It's actually better than ChatGPT 4 now. And I'm now paying for all of these services.
I am a neophyte when it comes to all of this AI stuff. So you speak of things I have no knowledge of. But
you're going to use it, and it's for a free tool that you can just use.
Sure.
Pretty great. I also happen to be a proud owner, and maybe I'll wear them next week, of the Ray-Bans that they now sell.
Oh.
So Meta has partnered with Ray-Ban for a pair of sunglasses. I also believe they have regular glasses.
Uh-huh.
There are cameras in the glasses. Uh-huh. You can, and speakers in the sort of the tips of the glasses. You can talk. So to the glasses, you can ask it a question. You can say, but what you can do is you can say, what kind of coffee is this? And you're just looking at it.
Right.
And the camera is looking at the coffee.
How are you looking at the results?
You're not looking at the results.
You're not looking at the results. It's helping you.
It's talking to you.
Okay.
No, so if I were to say, look, in a perfect world, I'd be wearing the glasses, looking at you, and I'd say, you wouldn't do this in front of them, but who is this person?
Right.
And the camera would look at you, and it would say, it's Melissa Lee. Now, I don't believe that it does that for people, but it could help you. Let's say you were wearing these glasses and you you're in Times Square, you're a tourist.
Right.
And you say,
what is
tell me about what I'm looking
right.
at. And it will start mm-hmm. talking to you. If you want to fix, let's say you want to fix the toilet, and you could say, well, what am I supposed to do here? And it will
give you suggestions.
By the way, some of the times it does properly. Uh-huh. Some of the times it doesn't.
I feel like if you can afford these glasses, you're not fixing your own toilet.
The glasses, I think, are $299 bucks.
Oh, not too bad.
Not too bad.
I think you should wear them next week. Joe's back, right?
Joe's back.
Yeah, I cannot
wait
to see
what
he's
going to
say.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up, the TikTok divest or ban bill is set for a fast track through Congress. CNBC's Emily Wilkins has an update on D.C.'s full weekend ahead. And former White House Chief Technology Officer Anish Chopra maps out what's next.
There is a reasonable probability that this escalates, that there's a chance that Chinese government may encourage TikTok to essentially say, hold the line. But in my view, this is an important and appropriate action.
Much more Squawk Pod right after this.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod.
We're watching Squawk Box on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin, along with Melissa Lee on this Friday morning. Joe and Becky are off today. I want to get straight over to Washington, D.C., where Emily Wilkins is right now, because the foreign aid to Israel has become front and center for U.S. Congress, and the House Speaker Mike Johnson making a push on that front ahead of the weekend, and lots of movement and motions for us to go through. Emily Wilkins is in Washington this morning. Good morning.
Yeah, Andrew, Congress was working late last night, got a lot of news here. The $95 billion foreign aid package and a potential TikTok ban, it's set for a critical vote today in the House. Now, the package has faced stiff opposition from a group of hardline Republicans, but there was a breakthrough last night. You had a group of Democrats on a key panel join with sort of more mainstream Republicans to move this legislation forward, overriding the objectives of hardline conservatives. Now, that's, we got to say, just extremely rare. Even though Democrats are going to vote for this foreign aid package in the end, they almost never help out with these process votes like the one we're going to see today that have proved to be huge stumbling blocks for Republicans. But it seems like Democrats are willing to make an exception and cross the aisle for Ukraine. And Democrats are again going to need to help Republicans today with a key vote to again overcome the objections of the House Freedom Caucus on this package, particularly Ukraine aid. Now, looming over this entire debate is a growing threat to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. But Johnson is not backing down. He called himself a wartime speaker this week and said the threats on the world stage are too critical to not address.
This is not a game. It's not a joke. We can't play politics with this. We have to do the right thing. And I'm willing to take personal risk for that because we have to do the right thing and history will judge us.
The final vote on the foreign aid and potential TikTok package is expected to come on Saturday. Now, to pass it, Johnson is taking a unique strategy here, breaking it up into four separate votes, one on Ukraine, one on Israel, one on the Indo-Pacific region, and one on national security measures. And that does include that updated TikTok divestment bill that would give the company up to nearly a year to find a buyer. And Andrew will be keeping a very close eye to see what Congress does there.
Emily, in that separate slice of national security where the TikTok ban, TikTok for sale part lives, what else is in that slice that could derail that effort?
So you have a couple different things in that piece. It includes a piece of legislation that would basically allow the U.S. to take seized Russian assets, liquidate them, and then use that money to assist Ukraine. You also have a number of different sanction efforts there on Russia, on China. And basically, this is on Iran as well, I should mention. And this is something that Johnson is pretty confident is going to pass. I mean, the reason they're not taking one big vote and breaking it down into four is because if you take each four individually, you have enough votes to pass them. You put them all together and you've got different groups who kind of oppose enough elements that it could endanger the overall passage of the bill. It's a unique strategy, but it's one that Republican leaders are confident is actually going to be getting this across the finish line.
And of course, it's making the forced divestiture a little bit more likely. Emily, thank you.
Joining us right now to talk about a possible TikTok ban or forced divestment and what could happen if Congress passes this bill, Anish Chopra. He served as the first U.S. Chief Technology Officer during the Obama administration, now president of health data platform Care Journey. Good morning to you. I think we're all trying to understand if, in fact, this bill gets put into place, what does happen to TikTok? TikTok will tell you it's the death of TikTok. It's over. Do you believe that?
No. Obviously, it's a very popular application. There will be some negotiation with respect to exactly what form and format a new ownership group might take responsibility. There is a reasonable probability that this escalates, that there's a chance that Chinese government may encourage TikTok to essentially say, hold the line. But in my view, this is an important and appropriate action, given the national security threats that are real and have been at the heart of why Congress is acting.
I want to get into all that in just 1 second, but let me just ask you about the escalation piece, because I would argue potentially that the escalation piece just happened overnight. China told Apple no longer to keep WhatsApp, Signal, and a number of other messaging apps in the App Store that's available in China, and whether you consider that an escalation, if you will, of where this is all headed.
Well, there's two forms of escalation. One is a natural and obvious issue around what and how our cybersecurity posture fits within the U.S. and concerns about Chinese hacker groups is sort of category one. Category two, of course, is this access to U.S. applications in China that's already in place. You can't get certain social media applications like Facebook or Google in China. But the third aspect I wanted to make sure you were aware of is if they just simply refuse to sell, what and how would we take on the role of actual removal or degradation of the service in terms of all the provisions in the law. So the latter is where I thought there may be some escalation. The other two have already been.
But answer that question. So let's say China says, we're not selling TikTok. So then you're going to have to call up Apple and you're going to have to say, take it out of the App Store?
Well, mechanically, what they would say is cease any updates. And so you just see, you know, versions of the app kind of stale and not capable of upgrade. So that would kind of be the pragmatic view of it. But my hope, and again, this is again like posturing, that this may be just if it's 51-49, that there could be a deal. This may push a little bit more towards getting a deal. And, but again, you know, 80-20 rule, it's probably. Right.
But you don't believe that they would call up Apple and say, or call up Google and say, literally, genuinely remove this app from every phone in America?
No. That's not even what's envisioned. I mean, basically what's envisioned is a cease of support and maintenance. I don't want to be too dramatic about it, but it would basically be let the thing degrade in service over time.
And let me ask you this, because I think there's a debate, and I worry that we haven't, well, I worry that we don't know the full picture. How much of this do you think of as a prospective national security threat, as in it's not a threat in the moment. It's not that TikTok, at least that we haven't seen, maybe you know something different, is demonstrably using the platform to influence in a nefarious way the American public today, but it's the possibility that they could in the future, or do you think that they are doing something today that is genuinely nefarious?
Well, remember, there's two challenges that we're trying to address in this national debate. One is, I think, already happening, which is that data on U.S. Residents is in some form or fashion in the hands of or accessible to the Chinese Communist Party. That's the kind of data privacy issue, and there are many ways in which that can be used against us, including phishing attacks to get us to mistakenly agree to release. So there's sort of, I believe that may already be, and there's been accusations of this already publicly, that there's already been some of that exfiltration. The second aspect, of course, is what you're describing, which is algorithmic manipulation. And for sure, that's an, I don't know, we're not privy to the, you know, I'm not in security briefings anymore, but those, to the extent that you want to get a signal, the fact that virtually anyone who's gotten that security briefing in Congress has been voting in favor of this bill gives you an indication that they're concerned. So algorithmic discrimination is a fear. We're going into an election, and you've been talking about market volatility. The two big threats are, will social media influence elections and markets? And these, as my guru, Senator Mark Warner, highlights, are the twin towers of trust in our economy.
Maybe this is a more philosophical question, Anish, but I'll ask it anyway. I mean, we're talking about a foreign adversary in China, but just as easily, there could be an adversary that is domestic. So where is the line? When it comes to Congress, when it comes to their ability to allow a business to operate or not operate because they think they are nefariously acting or have too much influence over the American public?
Yeah, this is the area where we need to be vigilant as a society, assuming the bill passes on implementation. It's very explicit that it's defined in statute what a foreign-controlled adversary is, but there is some discretion on whether or not organizations are influenced by. And there is a provision that allows the president to assert with some public comment and feedback and engagement with Congress what is in that maybe slight gray area about how far can this go. So I would stay vigilant on making sure this is tightly administered, but let's keep our eyes open on those definitions because that is the key where unintended consequences may arise. And so at the moment, I don't believe these rise to the risk of concern to withdraw support from this bill, but let's be vigilant that the definitions of what is a foreign-controlled adversary and who is influenced by needs attention.
Anish, appreciate your time, your perspective on all this morning. Hope you have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Next on Squawk Pod, the Property Brothers, Drew and Jonathan Scott, the HGTV design and real estate pair, are working with housing investors on finding maximum value at home.
For every 10 houses that we add to the portfolio, we'll probably have one or two that we end up flipping. But right now, it doesn't seem like a flipping market.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand Andrew by.
Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Welcome back to Squawk Box. Home ownership affordability falling to its lowest level since 1980. Potential buyers facing a combination of high interest rates and property taxes on top of surging costs for insurance, maintenance, and other expenses. Joining us to talk about what they're seeing in the housing market, the Property Brothers are here, Jonathan Scott and Drew Scott. They are the Scott Brothers, global co-founders. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, but who's who? That's the question.
Yeah.
Can you remember?
Jonathan's part?
We can tell you guys
apart.
You can tell us apart?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, here's my question to you. Here's the big question that I'm trying to understand. It's really an inflation question, and it's a mortgage-related question. At this point, given how high mortgage rates have gone, there seems to be a sense that there is no mobility. People feel, those folks who are in their homes, feel that they can't leave their home because it's just going to cost too much.
Yeah. Hmm. Which maybe they shouldn't be leaving their homes anyway, because it used to be you would get a home and you would be in this for your entire family. I mean, people would be in a home for, you know, 50 years, 60
Passing
years.
Down generation.
Now they say the average person moves every 3 to 5 years. And I don't know who the hell loves moving that much. But every time you move, you've got taxes, you've got, you know, real estate fees, insurance and all this stuff. It's a better idea for people to stay in the investment. That's why we say if you're going to buy a house, get something you know your family can grow into and spread those expenses out over a longer period
of
time.
Like you're saying as well, too, what with the incentives that are out there, there's a housing crisis, trying to create more density. There are incentives for people to convert their garages into a rental suite or their basement into a rental suite. And so something like that can make it more cost effective for people to live in their home. Anyone who has paid off their home are in a great spot, because there are a lot of people who had low interest rates and now their term's up and they have to refinance at something that's going to be, their expense is going to be over double every month.
Okay, what about all the folks who were thinking of doing renos because they thought maybe they ultimately flipped the home, like in the next 2 years?
Yeah.
Well, now you don't do the reno. Either you say to yourself, I'm going to do the reno because I want to do the reno for me, because I'm going to be in this.
Yeah.
Or I'm doing... But also, I might have to redo the reno in 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, but also with that cost, doing it for themselves, a lot of people are realizing it's a lot more expensive than they thought. We have so many people that have been saying, even if it is converting a garage, like, oh yeah, I have $50,000, $70,000, I'll renovate the garage. No, a garage conversion right now is something like, I think the cheapest we've been able to do is $200,000, $250,000 to do it right. So it's, it's crazy how much things are costing right now.
So when you guys started, it was what year?
We were 18 years old when we bought our first house.
95. 96, yeah.
So you've seen the lowest of the lows in terms of mortgage rates. I mean, the calculus is just completely different. You mentioned the incentive to convert your garage to rent it. But if it's going to cost you $300,000, what can you rent it for? The ability to recoup that money.
It's a long-term plan.
It's a much longer, So what are you finding in terms of the opportunities to do that same traditional flipping that you have become known
for? Well, you really need to be aware of what's available to you. And in some states, and I believe New York is one of them, they offer a cash incentive for people to create an ADU because they want to help with the density problem. So you need to know what's available. There can be tens, even up to $100,000 available for you to put toward that. That makes your numbers look a lot better.
And that's just an extra piece of property on the property.
Yeah, so like converting your garage into a rental ADU or building a garage, an ADU on your property. I think that's going to be actually a huge part of the solution. And if you look at the expenses a homeowner has at home, if all of a sudden you have this additional revenue coming in from someone who's renting a garage space from you, that is a lot more valuable than just looking at the interest rate that you're paying for your mortgage. So,
and also, and the but the folks renting the ADU, and this is again just what is ADU actually technically?
Auxiliary dwelling unit.
Right, but it's basically just
a rental.
It's like a garage or something.
Or
else
you stick
on
your grandma when they call it a grandma suite.
But are you doing this as an Airbnb kind of style thing, or are you doing this as a long term rental?
No, long term. I mean, short term has its benefits, but also has some drawbacks and headaches. And certain areas of the country have restrictions on what you can do for short term rentals. So for us, for example, for my rental portfolio, we for every 10 houses that we add to the portfolio, we'll probably have one or two that we end up flipping, because in the end the numbers did work. But right now it doesn't seem like a flipping market. You just have to adjust into what makes more sense for the current market. And the rental growth, there's a lot of rental demand, made more sense.
So how long do you keep things in your portfolio now?
It's a long-term plan, so I don't look to flip. With the rentals, we don't look to flip, but we have other opportunities that we've had that we've ended up stabilizing and selling. So it just
depends. I don't know if I should admit this. I'm on TikTok and on Instagram.
I've seen you do the dances.
And you've seen
very good.
No, when I see the guys who are desperately trying to tell me how I'm going to become, you know, super wealthy by doing this sort of Airbnb game, where I'm going to actually either buy property and then rent it, or I'm going to rent property and re-rent it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but there's also a lot of restrictions on
What do you make of that whole phenomenon?
99% of all the get-rich-quick people that you see online are full of beep.
Yep.
If everybody could do this, everybody would do this. But there's a lot of opportunity.
It doesn't stop me from watching it, thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, there is potential. I mean, even when we bought our very first house, we bought our first house for only $250 down. And people are like, how is that even possible? We read everything, every book we could, infomercials, and discovered that we could do a vendor take-back mortgage for all of the seller's equity. And we found a situation where that worked. Assumed their mortgage. At that time, if you didn't have to qualify if you assume their mortgage. Now you can't do that. But there's
all kinds of other options for how you can get into some of this stuff. You don't have to be afraid of debt, but right now debt is very expensive. So that's why if you work out your numbers, the numbers never lie. You know, we just picked up another 20-unit apartment building, and people are like, well, this maybe isn't the greatest time to be looking at something like this. This was the right deal, and the numbers worked. And so you have to look at every situation on its own.
All this confusion around what to do, though, that's why we have our new show, Backed by the Bros.
Yep.
It's people who have tried to get into real estate. They're not seasoned investors. Some people have had a couple of flip properties they've done in the past or rental units, but they get in over their heads because they've been watching those TikTok videos. They're seeing this content that's telling them you can do this, and then they spend in the worst way. They're not organized, and they end up in over their heads, and so we've had to come and bail them out.
What's the biggest mistake?
Not being organized.
Just not being organized?
You get people who say, I want to be my own GC, I'm going to run my own project. Oh. They don't realize as soon as one of their subs doesn't show up, it snowballs and affects everything. And with a rental property, the longer it's sitting, not rented, the faster you're going to dig yourself into a hole you can't get out of.
Here's another huge mistake. Somebody who listens to their, my buddy Jared said, blah, 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 whatever it is. Like,
right.
Don't listen to random idiot that you know that has no idea about real estate or what he's talking about. But it's usually like the loudest voice in your group is who you listen to, and then you make big mistakes.
Most people love giving advice even when they have no right to give you that advice.
Is there a market that you think is like the next big one to take off?
I'll be totally honest, I think Detroit's amazing. I think,
Detroit?
Yeah, when you look within a city, usually there's a certain area of the city that's really starting to redevelop, and there's so much potential, and eventually a lot of money gets invested, and then that area becomes a very valuable part of the city. Detroit is like that on a national level. Detroit, there's so much money pouring and so much redevelopment happening. I bet you in 20 years it's going to be one of the most technically advanced cities and so much offered
I also think that Canada, we're from Canada, the government there has incentives to encourage developers to work with multi-family housing as well as rental. I hope they can start to do some incentives down here the same way they are in Canada, because it's really making a dent in the housing crisis.
Okay. Jonathan, Drew, Detroit. Dan Gilbert That's will like that. We've been waiting for that inflection point in Detroit for a long time. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And that is Squawk Pod for today and for the week. It's Friday, thank goodness. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, and they'll all be back together Monday. Tune in to CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern, or catch the best of our show anytime on this podcast. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.